Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, to reflect on the weekend's rugby, very happy to say we have Stuart Barnes with us. You're there, Stuart?
I certainly am, yes.
Great to have you with us. And Liam Tolan, come in.
How are you doing?
Very well. Do you two know each other? Have you come across each other?
Do you want to answer that one, Liam?
Well, we had a glorious few weeks oscillating between Cardiff and London in 2015. It was planes, trains and automobiles. I don't know who was John Candy, though. One of us was. That wasn't me, maybe.
I think by the end of us, it might have been both.
Well, fellas, we're going to look back on round five of the Heineken Champions Cup. So the French clubs beat the Irish 3-1 in the end. Leinster, as they have for the whole season, really topped the pile. A 42-14 win over Lyon at the RDS. Munster away to Racing lost 39 points to 22. It was a scoreline, or it is a scoreline, which doesn't maybe reflect how competitive that game was for 70-odd minutes anyway. Ulster, after a good start in Clermont, went down 29 points to 13. And Connacht also lost at the weekend in Galway. Toulouse winning 21 points to 7. The net result is that Leinster have Bennett on next week. They will still have to win to guarantee themselves a home quarter final. Ulster will reach the knockout stages with a home win against Bath in Belfast. Connacht are out, as we know. And then Munster, well, qualification is the longest of shots. They need several results to go their way, including Racing winning away to Saracens. They will need two of the following three to happen: Toulouse to beat Gloucester, Lyon to beat Northampton, Lyon with nothing to play for, and Glasgow will have to fail to get a bonus win against Sale. So all that has to go their way. They're at home to Ospreys on Sunday, Munster. A game we'll bring you live because you can never quite write them off either, Liam. I presume much stranger things have happened. Let's start with Munster over in La Défense. 39 points to 22. Munster started very well. They were 9 points up. There was scoreboard pressure. The Conway intercept before halftime was a real bonus. And then on 64 minutes, they, in the end, decided to take the points. Farrell had gone over and was held up. But in the end, they took the points to go 22-20 up, Liam. Even at that stage, you felt like they were tired and the clock was going to beat them.
Well, as I was watching the game, I was really, really impressed by what Munster were doing in many aspects. It was a brilliant start for them in an unbelievable atmosphere and location. And they did exactly what you expect them to do. They put question marks on the home team and they quietened the home crowd. But I was just keeping an eye on the stats as the 5 minute segments was ticking along. And after about, 15 minutes or so, Munster were ahead, which was fantastic. But I looked at the meters gained, and with something like 30% of possession, Racing were way ahead on meters gained. It was like at three times the amount of difference. And I said, boy, that's gonna potentially count, because in the Racing starting 15, they had some freakish players who were very much influencing the meters gained and the clean breaks and that. And I was saying to myself, look, this is brilliant for Munster, but they're playing against a better side. They're playing against a side who can make better line breaks and can make advantage. And it was just a matter of trying to disrupt the flow and the balance of Racing. And unfortunately, with the last 20 minutes or last 15 minutes or so, that battle was lost. But the omens were there from early on, and you can't put off your cap at some of the scores that Racing treated us to. It was a marvellous, marvellous win, and Munster deserve credit. But I think the takeaway for me is they've another chapter to go before they can compete at that level.
Yeah, I suppose one of the moments you're talking about is Tevi Ibrahim's pass, which is just ridiculous. I can't remember seeing one quite like that before.
I was wondering what was going through his head. You know, where did a coach you say, what are you thinking? What should you be thinking? But when did he practice that in a training pitch before? And I suppose from Munster's point of view, a little like Connacht against Toulouse, is you know the players of this calibre can do that. What you want to do is limit their ability to do it. But when it does happen, like as a Munster fellow who played for Munster, you can't but just rejoice in the beautiful game that we have, that in the middle of all of that, that he can pull out that pass. It was wonderful to see.
Yeah, Stuart, I presume you loved it as well.
I'm a huge fan of Tevi Ibrahim. I think about 2 years ago, I was driving his bandwagon, and I welcome anyone along. I think he's a brilliant player. France are so lucky in terms of scrum halves. But I'd endorse a lot of what Liam has said there. you know, it wasn't just the Munster game. I'm a bit sceptical sometimes with stats, but if you look at Racing this year, they're leading all the aggressive stats in terms of line pass carrying, and it's not a coincidence. They have exceptional players, and if they are allowed the front foot, they will dominate. This weekend, they'll play Saracens, and Saracens will have to slow them and stop the front foot. Otherwise, they could win that game. So, from the Munster point of view, it didn't surprise me. A Munster win would have surprised me. And I think it's a reflection that this was a very well-organised Munster team, a typically combative Munster team. But this tournament has moved on in terms of four or five teams, and you need to be more than organised now. Munster don't quite have that brilliance in terms of controlling tempo in the back row. They don't have the ability to run a game at 9 and 10 and play in the right parts. And without those two aspects, they can be competitive. But in the end, they're a light heavyweight fighting a heavyweight, and it does tell. And I thought it was very interesting that the way Saturday afternoon, it was almost identical. Ulster, who were banging the game, but finally their legs started to go about 65. The same happened with Munster. And we've talked all this time about the French and their lack of fitness. And I still think they've got a long way to go individually. But what they do have is such power in depth in their 23 that they're able to compensate for that by bringing on these brutes who are just up in the ante. And it makes them very dangerous.
Yeah, there's a few interesting things there, Liam. Maybe just take the last point first. I mean, because we've often talked about the Irish fitness levels and they're better rested than their French counterparts. But there was a real sense Munster were running out of steam by comparison with Racing yesterday.
Yeah, but you look at the stats, and again, like after 20 minutes, Munster 70% possession. The scoreboard was ticking in their favour, but they weren't making inroads. And you think of the two number 13s, like you're probably a player of the world in the Racing number 13 jersey. And in Farrell, in the Munster jersey, I felt that Munster don't get him involved as often as they can. So for all the Dave Kilcoyne bust, and he hadn't Kilcoyne and Scannell at 1 and 2, they did brilliant games. But in terms of creating a platform to give the likes of Farrell a real opportunity, and indeed the two wingers and Earls and Conway, to give them real opportunity, I don't think Munster are yet contributing an overall game plan that gives them the opportunity. And to feed off what Stuart was saying there, if you were to pick an Irish side on the back of this weekend that's just gone, there's an awful lot of those, you know, regardless of the international class alliance tests, but how much do the Munster middle five really impact the fixture? The second rows and back rows in terms of giving Farrell and the Munster wingers an opportunity. And I think that's the piece of the jigsaw that they're getting towards, but I'm not so sure that they're there. And there's a number of quite obvious opportunities for Farrell off scrum time, etc., attacking scrum, just to get him onto the ball, and it's just not quite happening. So, yes, there's huge positive takeaways, but still, I'm not so sure that the Munster game, and I suppose I'll always go back to the Munster-Leinster game in Thomond Park a few weeks ago, into the rain. And Munster's game plan that day was box kicking. And in the second 40 minutes when Leinster were attacking, they had 70 metres of the width of a pitch, and they explored every single metre, even in the horrendous conditions. So they're the types of things that Munster are getting towards, and I don't think they're there just yet.
Stuart, do you look at Munster and see a side progressing under Johan van Graan?
No, I wouldn't say they're regressing, but I would not say they're progressing. To me, they look quite similar to the team that were taken to semi-finals under Razzie. They look a team, as I say, who are very well organised. They're sort of, dare I say, from this side of the Irish Sea, they have that Munster pride, and that takes them a long way. But I still see them as a team, the sum of whose parts aren't that great. And that's why, you know, I always sort of marvel when Munster make a semi-final, because they don't have the class. And we talk about their game plan, but between 6 and 10, as Liam said, that was in Munster's golden era, that's where they were the kings of Europe. Now, if you look at the top half of teams in Europe, Munster would probably be struggling to be in the top 10 European teams, stroke back row, half back. Mm. And you're not going to win European Cups, and it'll take a bloody great effort just to make the knockouts. And that's what they've been doing. They've been doing brilliantly to get to the knockout. They have to find more quality. I'm sure in Ireland you're talking about it all the time. I did a podcast with the Times and Sunday Times today. Mm. But the time has come in Ireland. I mean, Conor Murray is... He cannot start for Ireland now. I mean, he's just a shadow of what he was. Munster, if they play a kicking game, he has to kick well. He's not kicking well enough. He was loose yesterday. The time has come. I mean, Cooney has to start nine.
Liam, does it just boil down to that simple a point that Stuart makes when it comes to Munster at the moment? And maybe this has been the case for quite some time now. He used the phrase, they just don't have the class. And maybe it's been an overachievement of sorts to reach semi-finals, but the danger, the fear for Munster fans, I suspect, is that the Earls, Omani, Murray generation peters out. They still won't have the class. And that's just where they are in frank terms. We can talk about game plans, we can talk about Van Graan, but he just doesn't have the tools.
I made the point in commentary in Galway on News Talk on Saturday that it's a little like what Padraig Harrington said about golf in Ireland. If you're in the top golfer in Ireland, you're probably in the top 10 golfers in the world. And if you're starting on a Leinster team, whether it's first choice or second choice or indeed their third choice, there's a very good chance that you'll be playing for Ireland and that you're good enough to play for the Lions. And that's kind of where the juggernaut that Leinster have got to. You cannot say the same about Munster players. And there's players like, say, Jack O'Donoghue, I think he was just a superb player. Mm. But yet there's things that he can do that, say, Doris or Deegan certainly can do. But there's things that Deegan and Doris can do that maybe Jack O'Donoghue is yet to be able to figure out. And that's not his fault. That's just the culture and the environment he's come from. And it's just that he will grow into that, definitely, because he's got that. But he's not quite there. Like the subtle 3v2s, the fixing players and offloading, giving it to a better player. That's the stuff that Leinster do in their sleep. And that's not just because they're better. There's a coaching structure. There's a lot of things, ingredients going into that. Yeah. And I think that Munster of players that are, in many ways, are very fond of taking contact, whereas the top players, you saw Rassing, how they can create advantage by attacking a weak shoulder and getting a ball to a player who's running a really hard line. And Munster aren't doing enough of that. And there's lots of other things they're not doing enough of. But they just need an awful lot of new, probably second rows, definitely. And to add to Stuart, their addition in the back row, because if they lose one of those guys, then they're struggling. And you have to acknowledge as well that JJ Handren has done brilliantly, but he's still arguably the third choice out half in Munster. So whereas the third choice in Leinster still probably fits into the system better, if that's fair.
Yeah. On Van Graan, before we leave Munster, Liam, and where he is, in some respects unlucky, like the Joey Carby situation is just very unlucky on a host of fronts, and we could be talking about a very different finale to these group stages if they had got the losing bonus point in Saracens, which maybe should and could easily have happened, and certainly the drop goal against Racing jumps to mind as well. So we could be talking about Munster once again in the knockout stages, and I appreciate that. That's an important point to make. There was a piece, Hugh Farrelly had it in the Mail on Sunday yesterday. He was in here, he was talking about Van Graan, and it was the first kind of piece like this I'd sort of seen on Van Graan, where Hugh had talked to various people around the camp, younger players maybe slightly unhappy that they'd been promised game time and they're not getting it. The word scattered was used about Van Graan's coaching, an avalanche of detail, just those first kind of murmurs that can happen around a coach when things get a bit tricky. So whilst accepting that they could very easily be in the knockout stages, where is he now as he heads into next season?
I have some sympathy for Van Graan and the coaches. Like, in the last 5 years, they've gone through so many coaches, so many iterations, so many new... stuff hasn't been handled like you think of the Felix Jones and Gerry Flannery situation hasn't been handled particularly well. But the organisation has gone through an awful lot of change and seems to continue to go through change. And now, again, we've even more change with an English forwards coach, an Australian backs coach, and two great signings. But for me, my immediate reaction, well, who's in charge now? Like, who is running the tactical strategy of the team? I don't know the answer to that because I'm not privy to it. But it seems that what Munster need is they need to have a settled coaching structure for 2-3 seasons before you can start judging them, because they seem to be playing catch up on the coaching front quite a bit. And you can definitely see trademarks of what Larkham is trying to do with the Munster side. If you compare Munster at the close of last season, which was just like, I covered one of the games, as Munster against Benetton and Thomond Park. And like, Benetton were five times this, they didn't win, but they were about five times the rugby caliber that were Munster that day. They had just regressed into a very, very narrow game. and they're beginning to explore a wider game. I think they're a long way short of where they need to be. Whether this coaching structure can get there, only time can tell, but they certainly need time.
Okay, fair enough. Meanwhile, on the French team, Stuart, you're talking about Clermont-Ulster as well. Your piece in the Sunday Times, you talked about the French squad name for the Six Nations, 42 men, an average age of 24. You said that this victorious World Under 20 Championship team, they've got a World Cup in mind and they're heading towards that World Cup, whatever about this year's Six Nations. French rugby looks to be in a brilliant place, certainly from a talent pool point of view anyway.
Very good, and it helps in a way that they've been shambles for so long because expectations are very low. But they got the perfect sort of lift-off for Galtier in the World Cup in that they played some very good rugby. They were brilliant against Argentina for 40 minutes and then they were typically French awful. Against Wales, if Vahamahina had not been sent off, France would have won that game. Warren Gatland accepts they should have won that game. They were a better team than Wales, pushed the world champions pretty close. This France team were a good side in that World Cup. And I look at what Galtier has done now, and I know with all the headlines about all the young kids, a lot of those won't be involved in the Six Nations. But clearly, he's riding the wave towards 2023. All of France is behind him, which gives him a very good situation in that he's not under great pressure. And I think they will go out against England. They will have a mixture of youth and experience, and they will play with the courage of youth. And I think they're extremely dangerous this game. And I think England are the team who probably, as World Cup runners-up, feel they need to win the tournament. France are the team who might just be the wild card, go and beat England and be the hard team to beat.
Mm. And will they be well coached, the French?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. There's been some shambolic coaching and management as well. The divisions between players and coaches has been too great too often. You know, we've had two World Cups where coaches have seen players down tools. That can't happen. Now, Galtier can be a little bit petulant himself, but he's a bit of a national hero in France, and I think he'll be more suited to the national team than he was to either Montpellier or Toulon. But the key, I think, is Sean Edwards, because Sean Edwards will get a state of mind drilled into this French team that we haven't seen. It'll be a French mentality that would not have lost with 14 men against Wales, that would have driven on and won that game. And I think, you know, he's got to lock himself in a room and learn his French language. But he'll get enough to get through to them and get them to understand. I have a massive respect for Edwards. And I think he is the signing that France has needed for a long, long time. If you look at 10 years ago, they had an English defence coach, so his name has just slipped my mind. I wrote about him about 2 weeks ago. They won a couple of Grand Slams. They got to World Cup finals there. They do well when they've got Englishmen running their defence. They need a bit of structure. Mm. Edwards gives it to them, as well as Bite.
We're talking here with Stuart Barnes and Liam Toland. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. So Leinster 42, Leon 14. This was described in many quarters, Liam, as a fine. I mean, look, the 42 points, we can get a bit too demanding, I think, but maybe stuttering slightly in the first half, or certainly not a vintage performance. Then again, Leinster are already qualified, so that's kind of in the ether as well. Is there any danger here, Liam, as we kind of look at this season post-World Cup, and even during the World Cup really as well, we should say, as being just incredibly smooth for Leinster and almost problem-free? Is there any worry as a player, you've been in these situations or you've watched this competition over the last however many years, that they could saunter through this first half of the season and almost arrive into the perilous knockout stages somewhat untested? You know, certain systems not road tested, or certain, you know, we look at Doris, we look at Deegan, they've been so impressive in this environment, and you could suddenly rock up at an away semi-final in France and you don't get a second bite at the cherry. Do you have any worries or concerns on that front, looking at their performances? Because it seems like everything's a bit too easy for them at the moment.
Well, there's always a chance of a worry, and I checked our friends on the high street this weekend at the odds of that particular match, and Leinster were 1-200 favourites, which I don't know if I've ever seen. I don't know, Stuart, have you ever seen a horse race where there's two horses and one of them is 1-200? I don't recall it being that outlandish. And you saw how Leinster struggled for parts of the game, just finding the rhythm, finding the dominance. Look, professional elite players are always susceptible to allowing a grain of overconfidence or a grain of something into their mind. And in professional elite sport, all it takes is maybe 3 or 4% to create that question mark. The key for me against Lyon was that Leinster probably realized by halftime that, hang on a second here, and they did finish the job, and there was a number of tries left behind, and it could have been a much bigger score than it actually was. So yes, the danger is always there. And from a coaching point of view, I'm guessing it's no harm that that lesson came this weekend to remind the entire organization of the standards that they have and how they can mitigate against, protect themselves against. It's no harm. It's a good lesson in many ways. To still win but not playing particularly well means that the coach can go through them and the analysis of that. How many sides though in Europe, Joe, can genuinely consider themselves contenders against this side? I think Racing is one. Depending on Saracen's journey, can they get through on that? There's not too many. And that's probably a reflection of, and that's a story for a different day, but how there's many, many teams who just lose interest in Europe far too early. It wasn't like that in my day. It was a much more competitive environment right to the end. But you can see with the 20 teams, there's lots of them switching off. What was nice to see in Lyon for such a strong side is they didn't switch off. They did give it a fight. But I think it was a good lesson for Leinster.
Yeah, do you want to come in on those points, Stuart, about the sense that nobody's quite putting it up to Leinster, yeah, and how big a problem that is? And then also Liam's wider point about the competition is worth touching on, because it does seem, unless you're in that two or three or four who have a sniff, this competition is feeling like an inconvenience to too many teams.
And about an hour ago, I was going down through the fixtures so far. We've had 5 rounds, 10 matches each game, so we've had 50 games, and I think the bottom two have won a total of 12 games between them in each pool. That's, you know, that's 10 of the teams have got 12 wins out of 50. That gap is too big, and it is a concern. We're getting into the realm of Champions League football, you know, when we're talking Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, and the big English teams, and the rest, they're not at the races, and that is a concern for the competition. On a narrower front, I think for Leinster, I wouldn't be at all concerned about complacency. I think they're such a good team and they're so well drilled that that won't be an issue. But I would be worried that, through no fault of their own, they're just finding it a little bit too easy. And it's not complacency, but if they meet somebody who puts it up to them in a way they haven't this season, then it changes matters. You know, if Northampton go to Lyon and get a bonus point when it could well be that Leinster play Saracens at home. That is a very live possibility. Now, Leinster have been the team in Europe, but Saracens we know all about, and their capacity to nullify and negate other teams. And suddenly, if they play Saracens, they'll be playing a type of rugby, a team of rugby, an intensity of rugby they have come nowhere near. And that will be a real issue for Leinster. So that would be my concern. The other one would be, if Northampton were to finish eighth, they go into the semi-final, having probably humped Northampton yet again at home in a quarter-final, and they haven't played tough rugby. So I think that is the big concern. They haven't had the sort of rugby they needed.
Liam, you might cast your back row expertise on where we are at the moment, both at Leinster and then maybe broaden it out to Ireland. So if you play number 8 for Leinster at the moment, you tend to get man of the match. Max Deegan again at the weekend after the Connacht game, and before that, Caelan Doris. Doris, a specialist number 8. Deegan can move around a bit more. Brian O'Driscoll was on the station last week. He wondered maybe if Deegan might be a bit too lightweight to play number 8 at test level. What have we got here in Doris and Deegan, and where do they come into the Irish reckoning?
I think they're two wonderful footballing players that can mix it physically, but not quite maybe just as well as they will in a couple of seasons' time in terms of development. But what they have, they add real value to the ball. And a little like Jamie Heaslip, if you compare Jamie Heaslip to CJ Stander, you know, 4 or 5 seasons ago, you'd say, well, what do they do? They're very different number 8s. Both their Lions players, both their international players. But the likes of Deegan and Doris, they add so much value to other players that might not, like, you have wingers in the Leinster team who benefit from having a number 8 like Doris or Deegan playing. And that's the measure of that. How physically they're able to live up to a Six Nations environment is another debate.
Would you have concerns? We know,
huh?
You'd have concerns?
Yeah, well, we know that if you look at the last 6 years of the Six Nations Championship, the only changes to the starting 23 match on match over 6 years is because of retirement or injury, or you're playing against Italy. So if you look at England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales, the only time they make a change is because of an injury or retirement. with the exception of when you play against Italy. So there's almost no experimentation goes on in the Six Nations, and that's for a reason. So if you're asking, are these guys able to play for Ireland? They certainly have earned the right to play for Ireland. There's no doubt that they have the calibre and quality. Are they ready to play for Ireland? I think so. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they'll get selected, because a lot of other permutations comes into play. But what really, like, I've been to an awful lot of the Guinness 14 this season, and they're just wonderful. They have so much ambition around what they can do with space. And that's something that the Munster players have really traditionally struggled with. They create space by bashing the guy out of the way, whereas Doris and Deegan create space. They can do that, but they also elect to target weak shoulders and get offloads and stuff, which is of huge value to the team. I don't know, does that answer your question, Joe?
Yeah, it does.
But it certainly poses a question for the Irish management, because these guys are coming players. They're coming from a culture that's winning. They have a broad understanding of rugby, which is beyond a lot of players around the country, and they definitely have deserved the right to be selected. Whether this time round is going to be it is another debate. Statistically, generally, there's very little experimentation, and there will be a certain amount because of Conor Murray's form, injury at out half, etc. So how much further experimentation goes into that starting side against Scotland remains to be seen.
Okay. Yeah, please do, Stuart. Yeah.
Who's the best? It's about how do Ireland want to play. And if Farrell wants to get away with from a conservatism that I feel in the end killed Ireland in a World Cup year, then he has to make one or two, not a lot, but one or two drastic change. What Murray is one of them. Cooney gives an extra pace. The other thing is Stander. Stander, if you like, was another of the flag bearers of the last year of Joe Smith's management, in that there's very little offloading. He carried a lot. He carried safely, he carried slowly, he carried securely. It was okay against a weak team like Scotland, against a faster team like Ireland, Japan. It unravelled against New Zealand. It left Ireland looking just so ponderous. So I think Ireland, again, they've got to decide, what do they want to do? Do they want to carry on like Smith, and do they want to play a conservative keep ball game? Or do they want to try and utilise talent of men like Lama in the field and break it open a bit, get Ringrose into the game? And I think if you do that, then whilst, yes, there are question marks about Doris and Deegan, of course there are. There are always question marks about young blokes before they wear an international shirt. But the way they play is far more suited to an Ireland team who want to accelerate the way they're trying to play. CJ Stander applies the brakes.
Okay, oh, well, that's interesting, because I mean, we're not quite sure what to expect from Farrell yet, quite clearly. And do you not think Stander could be coached somehow? And maybe it's late in the day to say that, Stuart, but encourage maybe is the better way of putting it, to offload more, to take the ball less into contact.
I don't think so. I mean, he's not a giant. He's not an amazing athlete for forward. You know, he's a lump, and he's solid, and he's organised, and he does what he does very, very well. But it's utterly without ambition. Mm. You know, he'll make his tackles, but he doesn't make blasting tackles. He's just a glue player. He holds it together. And teams do need glue players, but I think he's so sticky that Ireland actually, come the World Cup, couldn't tear themselves away and get past third gear. And that's why I think, you know, Ireland have to make a change at 8 and 9. I think it's central to them changing the way they play. If they don't change 8 and 9... Then they try and play a faster game, then Farrell could find himself caught between the devil and the deep blue sea.
Liam, what's your Irish back row?
Well, see, someone like a Tadhg Byrne obviously creates a question mark, because, you know, is he involved? Is he not? I got a sense that Joe Smith wasn't a massive fan of him because he didn't quite do what he was told, whereas CJ Stander certainly does what he's told. And someone like a Tadhg Byrne would peel away in the defensive position, wouldn't be in the right place at the right time, according to Joe Smith, even though he was targeting turnovers. So if he's available, does he play or not? I would have said, come the end of the World Cup, that my starting back row would have been Reece Ruddock, Jack Conan, and Josh van der Fleer, which means you're dropping Peter Omani, CJ Stander et al. But I just think the creativity of that back row. Now, Jack Conan is injured, obviously. Dan Levy is injured. But Josh van der Fleer certainly isn't. I think that a creative back row is needed. If Jack Conan was available, I would be personally a fan of his, but he's not. So it really comes down to combinations. And part of that was, is Tadhg Burn going to start? Is he going to start at six or not? And it feeds into what Stuart is saying. What type of game plan do Ireland want to play? How risky do they want to be? And they need to get more creativity from their number eight. Like Jamie Heaslip was just such a phenomenal number eight. He never got the credit he really deserved because so many people benefited from him. Wingers, like four phases later, benefited from the decisions he made, the yards he made, and the offloads he made. And there's precious little of that coming from the Munster back row. But you can't delineate leadership, so you have to find that mix. So where they start, I think the halfback is where they have to start, obviously, and they start filling in from there. But Reece Ruddock, I certainly wouldn't be slow to not include him. Is that a double negative or a triple negative?
He's in your team.
yes, certainly. And Josh van der Fleer. So big conundrum then is, do you make a complete clean sweep? I think they should. Right. I think a Leinster back row is hard to argue against.
Okay. Stuart, before you go, can we ask you about Saracens, who are lurking with intent, as we said, in the knockout stages of Europe and where we are. So we know all about the 35 points and the 5 million. Lord Dyson, the chairman of the panel that found Saracens guilty, has certainly called for the full report to be published. That hasn't happened yet. I don't know if that's going to happen. And it was interesting to see Edward Griffiths, who's now gone back in as CEO, certainly in the interim. He said, I think the first step at the moment is to demonstrate unequivocally that we are operating within the salary cap in the current season, in the 2019-2020 season. And that really is a challenge on two levels. It's a challenge with spreadsheets and calculators and the numbers, but it's also a challenge in terms of perception. Now, given the reports of maybe George Cruz's imminent departure and Liam Williams as well, and maybe even talk of pay cuts, I don't know how true those are or not. But when we talk about the perception would of course be amongst pretty much everyone that they are obviously still operating outside of the salary cap, unless they've made massive cuts that they haven't told us about.
Yeah, that would be the perception. And I've known Ed Griffiths since he ran the 1995 South Africa World Cup campaign, which he did quite brilliantly. He's a very shrewd man. He understands the rugby public opinion that has lined up against Saracens, and he is trying to say the right things now. Nigel Ray is a man I like, but he understood in the end that just his presence led to the fact that he had to leave. So Saracens now, I think, are in that situation. I think one or two big names are going to go, and they're going to go quickly, and that will be an attempt to really put a lid on it by closing off the whole perception argument. And they still have, I believe, if they were to lose Cruz and Liam Williams, one or two more, they still have a squad very capable of winning the European Cup. I'll say this now, they may have broken the salary cap in England, but they were a deserving European Cup winning team. You don't just win European Cups by spending a lot of money. We've seen that there are football teams who do that and they get nowhere. They are brilliantly coached by Mark McCall. They have a fantastic inner resolve, and they are as smart an English team as I have ever seen. They are on the pitch, they are an outstanding team, and I still believe that they will be. They have a major part to play in this tournament.
Liam, do you go along with all that? Because I know what Stuart says is right. They've been brilliantly coached, and they've certainly spent the money the right way, and not every club does that by some measure in all sports, but the fact remains they spent money that they should have been spending.
Yeah, I think of Sonia Sullivan, the Olympics, and how many medals might she have won if the people ahead of her were a little bit more honest in how they approached the competitions. I would feel very upset if I was losing out to domestic competitions because of Saracens and their methodology. From a European point of view, they've been amazing. I played with Mark McCall. He's an amazing fella, and there's a brilliant culture in Saracens that go way beyond just playing. They go on about building characters and that sort of stuff, which is very, very impressive. I would just say, one hat on, if I was one of the other Premiership sides, I'd be deeply upset that I was losing out on an opportunity to win if someone else was breaking the rules.
Yeah, well, I think plenty of them have been. Fellas, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much. Stuart Barnes, great to have you with us. Liam Tolan, thanks as ever.
Pleasure. Bye, bye.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.